The following workshop is Saving the Commitment to Marriage, presented by Dorothy O'Neill at the 2015 CCHF Conference.
All right, well, welcome everybody and thank you for coming. I am very, very excited to be here. This is a great topic and it's wonderful to be able to share this topic and actually to be able to be allowed to be present for you all at this time. I actually would like to open in prayer, if everybody would bow their heads. Dear Lord, thank you for letting me be here today with so many who serve you. When so many meet together to honor you, the power of your glory is so present. Please allow us to continue your word and serve you in your name. Amen. Well, I am a marriage and family therapist, but that's not how I started. I started as an interior designer. And so I was actually... My background was very heavily couples before I even became a marriage and family therapist. So negotiating the decision between what bathtub to buy or what paint to put on the wall is a major an accomplishment between couples so they stay married. So I experienced that road to divorce long before I went into the field of marriage and family therapy. So I went in quite prepared. It is an amazing field and I feel really blessed to be part of the field of marriage and family therapy. My world in design, I believe, was there for a reason. During my time as a designer at the peak of the building boom, my niece got cancer. And in England, they wouldn't treat her because she was below the 40 percentile. And if you're below 40 and below, then they feel that it's a waste of money to treat. So on, and because her cancer was on the third time coming back, and they decided it was a waste. So I brought her here, and I took her to UCLA, and that was 7 years ago, and she is still alive with us today and cancer-free. So I believe my work as a designer was meant to be, I believe in God's trip on his journey for me in my life. I was meant to be there, otherwise I wouldn't have made that kind of money to pay cash for that kind of health care that I had to do. So now down the road, he's decided this is my place I should be. And Saving Marriages, I believe, is he has made me his conduit to work on divorce, to work on couples that need to stay together. Most couples that come to see me definitely are on the edge of divorce, but really in who they are as couples, they truly aren't. They truly have things that are going on in their lives that are pushing them to the end, to that precipice, to that last resort. And if there was just more intervention earlier, so many more people would never get to that end result. Integrated behavioral couples therapy is a theory that I came across unexpectedly in my school exposure to theories. And I have used it now continuously with my couples. And in the brochure, it says 90% success rate. It's actually 70%. In longitudinal studies, 70% of highly distressed couples are still together. So it has a very strong basis in couples work. So what I'm going to do today is I'm going to go through the different interventions and how it's used. The basis of integrated behavioral couples therapy is acceptance. And as we know in grace, you know, we are here to accept and become tolerant. In integrated behavioral couples therapy, it is that, but in a therapeutic place. So I just want to start with this opening, for I know the thoughts that I think towards you, says the Lord, thoughts of peace and not of evil, to give you a future and a hope. I am so overwhelmed. This conference was called Hope, and I'm here for the first time because hope is what I try to instill in my couples to stay together. If they can have hope, then they can believe every session something is going to change in their world as a couple, and they will stay married. It is such a huge part of their journey. Marriage takes investment, takes a lot of work, takes two people coming together. And if we imagine, as we all know, if we're for the ones of us married or the ones that are dating, that coming together as a couple, you bring two different personalities. And there are many things we wouldn't merge in life without planning. But in marriage, we fall in love and we come down this road and we marry. And then we have these personalities that are supposed to just blend. And often they would blend if people had the tools to know how to blend them. We wouldn't make a cake we don't know if we didn't have a recipe. We wouldn't do it with half the ingredients. And in couples therapy, especially in this theory, we try to give them those ingredients that are missing. So one third of marriages are in distress, one half of marriages divorce, even higher, I think, today. Remarriages fare less, which is very sad because often couples pick the same person that they married before they marry that same individual. Many are unhappy but stable. Now, in this theory, we're okay if they're unstable, but they're able to have a commitment to each other. Because in life, nothing is ever going to be perfect. You're always going to argue. You're always going to fight. And when couples come to see me, they say, the first thing they do is they sit down. Well, first they're hoping to fix each other. He's coming in so she can be fixed, and he's coming in so she can be fixed. And they sit down, and that's sort of their onus of coming in. And then when I ask them, which I ask them off the bat, why are they here? What is going on? The first thing they all say, and I can say all of them because it's been all of them, we don't communicate. That's it. We don't communicate. And actually, what I say to them, my line is, you do communicate. Because when you argue, you communicate. When you don't get along, you communicate. So you actually are communicating. You're just not communicating in the right way. I think this is a great little slide. I should actually put my number on there. So IBCT was developed by Andrew Christensen, Dr. Christensen, and the late Dr. Jacobson. They both did different kinds of, if any of you are in the mental health field or in the MFT world or LSCW or the social work, you'll know that there are many different areas to get to couples. And you've got CBT, you have emotionally focused therapy, you have traditional behavioral therapy. What happened with traditional behavioral couples therapy, which was based in CBT, they realized that something was missing. There was a component missing. It was, even though they did the work, there was a component missing for the long term. And that component happened to be acceptance and tolerance. And that was the component that these two founders went after in their work and in their research. And they have done considerable research. They've also written two very, very useful books. IBCT views the relationship problems resulting from problematic patterns of interaction. IBC uses techniques to develop emotional acceptance. And as we go through, that will make more sense to what that actually means. What it's not is, because when I talk to people about IBCT, often when I'm speaking about it, people will say, well, to be tolerant means you're being submissive. To be accepting, you're being submissive. What IBCT isn't about being submissive or giving permission to be abusive. It's about, and you will see as we go through, that it's more about the acceptance you have within yourself, not the acceptance of the other person. What it is seeing feeling problems as understandable, reducing adversarial relationship, and letting go of the struggle to change the other person. To change the other person is one of the major factors that keep couples in that place of strife. It's one of the major issues that they come in with. And after session, if they can let go a tiny bit of change, they begin to be able to let go of change completely. Acceptance is marital couples beginning with a grudging tolerance and eventually working their way up to embracing their differences through acceptance. So that is the premise behind IBCT, is to find acceptance, and to change in acceptance are two major parts of this theory. This was a great little cartoon. As I was looking for them, I thought this was great. We met, fell madly in love, got engaged, had a lovely wedding and honeymoon, then things turned sour, we grew bitter, separated and divorced. It was quite a busy weekend. So in IBCT, what we do is we interview our couples and we have them coming together, and we actually sit and talk to them. And we don't start with a therapeutic intervention. We actually want to get to know them. So we want to ask them about what attracted you to each other. And you will be overwhelmed. If you stop with a first session in a therapeutic mode and you start it with a curious, inquisitive mode, in a mode of who are you? You know, you guys are here because you're on the border of divorce, but who are you? How did you meet? How did you possibly get married if you dislike each other so much now? What was it about you that brought you together? And so that is one of the neat things about this theory. You ask them about how you met. Who asked who out? What was the first thing you said to her? What was it you liked about her? And you will be amazed. You could spend that almost that first hour of that therapeutic first session that they've come in because they cannot get along. And they start laughing and joking. Oh, remember the car stalled and you said, why don't you get a new car? Or, oh, remember as I walked up to you, you burped. And so they remember all these tiny things that really make them laugh. And they sit in that room and for a long time they have not laughed. And they sit in that room and they start laughing or telling stories that really, really bring back memories of, wow, we did like each other once. You go through the dating of how the problem developed and what's going on. And you don't really focus on it, like get into detail. You go back and forward. You ask him, you ask her, you ask him. You don't stay, you don't have one dominate the room and say, well, I can tell you what's wrong with him. I can tell you 100% things are wrong with him. That's not what you want. What you want is an overview. You want them to stay together. At this moment, in this very first session, you want them to stay joined in the trouble, in the conflict, in the current situation. And then you want them to discover what the problem truly is. So in that interview, you're looking for reaction versus action, wound versus arrow. Vague and specific, impersonal and personal. So you're sort of, as you're listening to them, they're telling you things and you're taking notes. So you're writing down everything you think and see. What you are doing in that first therapeutic intervention, which is we call an interview in IVCT, you are taking notes on who are these people. What made them function? What brings them to you? And so these are the things you would be looking for at that time. At that first session, you assign them a package of questionnaires. And I think that's on the next slide. Okay, so you assign them these questionnaires and you ask them to fill them in separately. And you don't say, I want you to fill them in separately because I want you to have secrets or I don't want you to talk to each other. You want to tell them that you truly want an honest understanding of who they are individually. And you want them to know that these questionnaires are private. They're, whatever they write on those questionnaires are for me only, that I'm going to use it. I'm using these questionnaires for the very reason they came in, to bring them back together and help that union, that blessed union, that reason they got married, to come back together. That's the only, these aren't to throw stones at each other or for me to find fault in one or the other, but they're truly to bring this couple back to an understanding and back to their relationship. After that first interview, you then have an individual interview with each of them. You set up a time. And at this interview, you go over the confidentiality, because in many couples there is different things. There is, what's the word I'm looking for? When you have an affair.
Betrayal.
Thank you. And different kinds of betrayal, but adultery was the word I was looking for. It just slipped my lips for a moment. So adultery, and so many have come through adultery and they're not getting along. They're trying to stay together, but adultery is sitting very thick in their marriage. And so they're going to come in and they're going to talk about it. So at this session, you do go over that. What we say in this session, again, is for me to bring everything back together when I get you back together and bring the things that work for the two of you. So if you want to tell me something in this session that you don't want to share, then we need to talk about why it cannot be shared, or the reasons behind it, or what is it for you that it's very difficult to share, and is there a time in the sessions that it would be able to be something we can share? So you don't say, oh, because in couples therapy, many therapists have a secrets agreement. There's no secrets, and they come in with that. And in this individual, we don't want them to think a secret is going to stop you being able to be vulnerable, is going to stop you able to be honest. At this moment, it's important that everything you share in these two, in the individual and the first one, come together to create something that I can work with to help these couples. So you will go over confidentiality, if there's any violence, any psychiatric history, previous marriages, also about their family of origin. That's a really important part because you want to know, did they come from a very domineering father or a very loose, you know, a very unavailable father, or was it a very tight-knit family? What were the expectations in that family? You know, who made the rules? You want a little family history because that defines that person very, very much to how they came into their marriage because they brought all of that with them. So if you know both of the sides, you have a lot more information when you do bring them together. So what happens during those three interviews, I've been taking notes, I've listened to them, I go back, I look at their questionnaires, I read them. So, you know, it might say, are you happy in this? This happens all the time. On my questionnaire, it says, are you happy in the marriage? I get a 5 from the husband and I get a 1 from the wife. Or I get a 1 from the husband. So you can even see in that questionnaire how far apart they are, how they think this marriage is. So the questionnaires, they're Dr. Christensen's questionnaires. He has the packet of questionnaires, and they're awesome. They cover everything you can imagine, and they're very easy for the couple to fill in. So you take those, you take the information, and then you have them back together. And you have the feedback session. So the feedback session is you've got all this information and you have written up your own little novel about this couple. And you are going to sit there and you're going to talk to them and you're going to tell them what you think about this couple. I mean, this is one of my favorite times is the formulation because it is unbelievable that when you see these two warring fractions and they come in for this formulation, you actually can sit there and say, my gosh, you agree on far more than you realize. You actually agree on so many things that you have even forgotten that you agree on. You know, your parenting, you both have this very strong commitment to being a parent. You both have this amazing commitment to your in-laws. You have this ability to think about how money is spent. Those are strengths. Those are part of your relationship that are still very strong and very intact. So you want to talk about their strengths. You want to talk about who they are. In that formulation, you are looking for their differences and incompatibilities. You're looking for how they reacted emotionally when they were in the room with you individually, and the external stresses and their patterns of communication. So in that session, you will say to someone that I have said, you are so different in this one area. You are on polar opposites. You have such differences on how you think about such and such a thing. And they sit there and it's something that isn't irreconcilable. But in the big picture of the marriage where everything is floating around everything, they aren't honed on that one thing or those things that they have differences in. They're not irreconcilable differences. And maybe they are. You know, some of them are not differences that mean that much. If there's no emotional investment, if you go to bed at 8 o'clock and I go to bed at midnight and I really want you to be in bed with me at 8 o'clock, but I want you to stay up with me till midnight and there's no attachment problem, you know, you're not coming to bed at 8 because you don't like me or you're not staying up till 12 because you're avoiding me, but it's just that I'm an early bird. I'll always be, by 10 o'clock, I can't stay awake. I want to go to bed at 8 o'clock. Those differences are the kind of differences that will always be there. We're talking about the differences that you have to learn about your partner that actually you have to look at differently. Goals for treatment, acceptance, and change. Okay, so change is where they come in and say, I want to change my husband and I want to change my wife. That's the most common one I get. So this will, of course I can accept you for who you are. You are someone I need to change. That I should put that on the wall in my office because they don't even, this is what they come in with. So, okay. Change. So in change, it's being the agent of change doesn't mean you were wrong. And that's a biggie for couples, you know. While you're waiting for the other person to change, you are powerless. You are powerless because you are, how many couples, and if you see couples or any of you see, how many times do they come back with the same script? you know, it's the same issue, just a different script, but it is the same issue because they're waiting for change. They're waiting for their husband to see that there's something they need to do, or their husband or their wife needs to do something different. If only she would, if only he would. So that's part of change, is letting go of changing your partner. And knowing, being the agent of change doesn't mean you're wrong. So the sessions after formulation, once they've been with you for the formulation, and I'm going to tell you something Dr. Christensen told me long, long time ago. He and I have become very close since I've started using this theory. I'm actually meeting him in London on Monday. So he presents around the world. Is that after the formulation, he told me this when I very first started IBCT, he said, sometimes that's all they need. And you know what? I thought, there's no way. I've seen couples for months and months and they still don't like each other, you know? So there is something about, if they're not too distressed. Now, remember, you've got highly distressed couples. You've got adultery. You've got violation of a marriage in many different ways that really has split that couple to a point that it's going to take a lot to bring them back. But you have couples that just aren't getting along, and there is just, it's just not right, and they know it, and they know they're on that road. And many couples who, you know, have turned to their church or their faith, and they still need something just on top of that. And so those couples tend to come in, and more often than not, after the formulation, they're already on that road of being more accepting of each other, even without the rest of the work. So in a session, in an IBC session, when the couple comes back, a couple of things that you do is when they come in, as in some theories, you have the couple talk to each other, like in emotionally focused therapy and in different ones. In IBCT, you talk for the couple in the beginning. Not always, but in the beginning, because what it helps you do, it helps them hear the other person. So you don't want them just to, because they're going to hear the other person with that emotional attachment of hurt. So if they say it and the other person starts to react, as a therapist, you already have come back in and said, you know, what I think Tom is saying is that. And so with empathetic joining, you might say, what I hear Tom says is that when he comes in from work and you're upset because he hasn't been there all day and he's not spending time with you the minute walks in, that he's feeling, wow, you know, how can I be in both places? You know, how can I come in from work and be the husband I want to be? Because I'm in this marriage. I love my wife. I have a commitment to her. I have a commitment to my children. How can I help her see that I need that 5 minutes when I come through the door just to unwind? So I have reframed what Tom told me, told her, like, I just need time. See? So when he says, I just need time, she hears, you don't like me. You don't want to be with me. I'm not important. I'm the one doing all the work. I've been home all day with the kids. But when you reframe it for her, then she has the opportunity of hearing it, not from Tom, but from you. So that is empathetic joining, feeling understood. So creating that intimacy and that empathy, taking away the emotional hurt and replacing it with empathetic joining and with the intimacy that this couple really has. Because as I always say to my couples, even no matter how much it escalates, is that if you didn't love each other, if you didn't care about the bond of marriage, if it didn't mean a lot to you, you would not be sitting in this room right now. You would not be here. The fact you're here says you care. So you have to do the work. And so you're going to have to learn to let go of that terrible pain you carry, that terrible pain of abandonment, the terrible pain of rejection, and try and see it in another way. So this helps the therapist really spread that word through empathetic joining. Unified detachment. This is one of my favorites. I use both of them, and they're interchangeable during the sessions. Unified detachment would say, the same scenario with Tom, you would say, well, Tom, what I heard you say was, you walk through the door, do you put your bag down, or do you take your coat off, do you put your briefcase down, or do you come straight into the kitchen? Do you come through the garage, or do you come through the front door? So what you're saying is, you're making it clinical, you're making it as if he's telling you the facts. You make it very factual. You don't go to, so what you're doing is, it's like, oh, well, I come through the garage, I park the car and I come through the garage. Okay, do you walk straight into the kitchen or do you go straight into the living room? So what you're saying to him is you're making the scenario very scientific, very clinical, very clean. You're taking, again, just like you did with empathetic joining, you're taking the emotion out of it. So in empathetic joining, you're adding intimacy through empathetic talk. In this one, you're taking out the emotion and you're interjecting a scientific point of view of what took place. You're taking all that emotion out of it at that moment. And you know, when he says, well, I come through the garage, you might say, well, doesn't the front door, is it, you know, you might make a joke. You might say, oh, do you prefer the garage to the front door? Is there something, you know, you might, that's a silly joke, but you might come up with a joke. I come up with humor, especially at this time, you can say funny things. I just can't think of any funny things right now. None. And I've said loads of them. All right. So that's unified detachment. Okay, so what you want to do during these two kinds of interventions is you want to interrupt, redirect, referee, and reframe. So interrupt the process. So you might say, so interrupting the process is really important because as you all know, we have runaway clients. You know, they can tell you the same story with a different script, but it's exactly the one they told you the week before and the week before and the week before. And it's the one that guides them into failure in their marriage. It's the one that guides there are problems to keep them apart. And so you want to be able to interrupt and say, okay, so we've heard that trigger before, so you can cut it off before it starts the whole story. Because remember, they're there to change. They're not there because they've got nothing to do for that hour and they're spending that money. So they might as well get value for their money for the therapeutic work. Reframe is what I was telling you earlier. It seems like when you hear that, it feels like you are being judged. So you could be able to go to that person and really reframe like, you know, this is what I'm hearing and I'm thinking this is what you're feeling. And, you know, correct me if I'm right. Correct me if I'm wrong. And correct me if I'm right. Exactly. Correct me if I'm wrong, you know, and actually give me a high five if I'm right, you know. So interrupt the process and then reframe, redirect. So redirect is that same kind of thing. How can you say that without feeling that you're not being heard by your partner? So you're looking at using these during those moments of those interactions. And then referee. Okay, that one I use a lot, the referee one. That's my biggie. Okay, we've done that before. Let's go somewhere else. So the goal is tolerance building through acceptance. This is the goal. Next one. Okay, so in IBCT, you start with empathetic joining and unified detachment. Partners get heard, understood, and true issues and feelings get exposed. So you always start with those. The tolerance building doesn't come till later, because if you ask someone to be tolerant of their partner when they don't like them, it's going to be very, very difficult. So during empathetic and unified, you're actually breaking that pattern of poor behavior, of poor communication. You're building a better understanding of situations, because every week when they come in, we have a weekly questionnaire. They bring in every single week. And on that questionnaire, it's a weekly questionnaire. They fill in where they're going, you know, from 1 to 5, where the marriage is going. And they also put something that happened that week. And so as the therapist, you take that, what happened, and that's what you use in your sessions. Because whatever happened on that one little script they both bring in, it's usually the same thing. It's really neat to see that, because they both agree that, and they don't share those questions that weekly. They do it individually, but it's usually often something happened. They both got the same thing, and when you read it, it's completely different. It's like you were in two different rooms when this happened. You were never in the same room because it's so different. And so you take that, because that whatever they're telling you is what's going on all week. So you don't need to know what happened on Monday and Wednesday and Friday. You just need to take that one thing and interject that into using the empathetic joining and detachment to work through that one issue. And then they tend to take that same script and then they use it in the other issues that are similar. So you start here and then you go to tolerance building, which is definitely after they have some distance from the triggers. Because as I said, there is no way you can build tolerance in a couple that does not have any sense of commitment to getting rid of the problem, you know, on the level they need to. So again, you just keep going back to empathetic and unified. You capitalize on their strengths. I use a lot of humor. I love humor. I really do. I'm very comfortable with humor. I think it, when you hear a couple laugh in your room, there is nothing greater. God, you know, this gift of being a therapist is a wonderful gift. I feel, you know, our Lord has given me a wonderful tool to use with people and couples and to save marriages. I feel blessed to do his work. And when I hear people laugh in the room, I feel so humbled that, you know, there is something I've done in his name to get that couple to laugh again together. You know, it's a powerful moment. So you address the things that are going on, the shutting down, the difficulty in communicating, and you keep repeating it over and over again. So acceptance before tolerance. So tolerance building. So just to, I think we're going to get to a slide in a minute that talks about this, but what happens in IBCT is when we say we want them to become accepting through tolerance is that, and I'll give you a little quick example of a couple. So I have, and this is a really silly one, and this one that the man came up with himself. This isn't mine. This is at the end of their sessions. They're not coming back anymore. They're doing amazing things, and they're very happy. And this is one of the last session. He was sitting there, and he said, you know, I've always thought, and they're an Indian couple, and she makes brown rice, and he hates brown rice, you know, but he's told her often enough, he doesn't like, I don't like brown rice either, actually. And so, but she always makes it, and he grudgingly eats it, and he really annoys him because she keeps making it. And in this last session, he says, you know what I realize is that she doesn't make me brown rice because she wants to irritate me. She makes me brown rice because she loves me and wants me to always be here. And she realizes brown rice is better for me, better for my heart, better for my health, because she wants me to live a longer life because she loves me. Now, he said that without me doing a single thing about brown rice, because he had been through learning acceptance and looking at himself and how he was expressing how he felt when he accepted that the brown rice was not about her irritating him or not caring or not listening. See, that was the thing. It was because she didn't listen to him. He told her a million times, I don't like brown rice, and she didn't care. He finally got it. That it was about, so see where he became tolerant. He still hates brown rice. He's tolerant of the fact she makes it by accepting the fact she loves him. So that's what we're doing in IBCT. So when we're building it, we get them to play some of their negative interactions in the room so that they can laugh at how silly it is. And it does. It gets very silly when you ask them to play what they just wrote down. They look at it and think, well, you know, it really seemed like it wasn't that big a thing, but it was huge for them in the moment. You have them fake negative behavior, which again brings it, you know, in the room, it gets them to play out different things. They can always find something, but it starts to take some of that strength out of that lack of caring for each other. It starts taking you're all bad and I'm all good, or, you know, this marriage doesn't work. It starts to tunnel those terrible thoughts out the door. Ready. So self-care. So this is one that for more high conflictual clients, it is very important that you do discuss that when the situation is escalating, rather than stay in it and recreate the same dialogue that you've always dialogued, you want them to self-care, you want them to walk away from the situation at that moment, which they're not actually saying, I'm walking away from you. If they're aware that I'm doing this for self-care and the partner knows I'm going to do this for self-care, it's different than turning my back and walking away. I'm doing this because I can't go to where I need to go, so I'm going to go to self-care. So that's the difference than being somebody who's avoidant. You know, if your husband, you've always felt he's avoiding and you're working in therapy and then he leaves the room, you're going to go back to day one and say, well, he's doing his old tape. But if that tape is, I need to self-care right now because I'm not sure how to handle this, I need to take care of myself right now, then it's different than walking away from them. So the couples that aren't appropriate for IBCT are couples that have untreated substance abuse or dependency, psychotic, I think that it would be very, very difficult to tell a borderline to be accepting of another behavior or be tolerant of a behavior. Very, very difficult indeed. I mean, they're already victimized in their own world, and then to say, you know, you have to accept this person's behavior. It would be, especially in the premise of how IBCT works, it's really truly about you learning and accepting the other person. Couples not living together regularly, one or both not committed to a relationship, and one wants to end the relationship. I have one that wants to end the relationship. From the time they came in, I knew from the beginning that she was committed and he wasn't. And, you know, so we really did very little IBCT work, because it has to be something that grows. You know, it has to blossom. If it doesn't blossom, you can tell it's not blossoming. Even if they come in every week and there's a small shift, it's blossoming. There's a change taking place in a couple that might be divorced. Any move towards unification of that couple, of the love and the bond that they gave to each other once, is a shift. It can be tiny, but it's a shift. In this couple, there was no shift. And so really, the good thing was we worked on how they would end their relationship, and it wasn't in the confines of IBCT. In IBCT, termination, it usually takes, how many weeks, Farhat, do we say you're in?
Usually about four.
No, for the, I think it's, isn't it, how many weeks does Andrew say? 8 to 12 weeks?
For the entire,
yeah, is it 21?
Up to 20 weeks.
Up to 20 weeks. So IBCT should take up to about 20 weeks. Some, like my Indian couple, I think they were most probably in 10 weeks, and I have other couples that have been in for 8 weeks. I've had a couple of couples in for 3. So, you know, that if they're not too distressed and they really don't, they're on that road. This is how I see issues in a marriage. I believe that marriages start off with a grain of sand. So if you were at the beach and you had a sandwich and there was a little bit of sand in it and you're really enjoying that sandwich, you most probably would finish it, wouldn't you? You wouldn't throw it away. Okay, so if you were sitting on the beach and you had a little bit of sand in your swimsuit, you might not leave the beach because you have a grain of sand in your swimsuit. So that's how I see marriages. Most marriages have a grain of sand, and that grain of sand can be tolerated in a healthy, stable relationship. Then it becomes a pebble. And when that, if you're walking along the road and you had a little pebble in your shoe, you'd stop and take it out, but you'd keep walking. You'd be able to do it very quickly. You take the pebble out and you keep going. And then it becomes a rock. And when it becomes a rock, it becomes a time that you really have to think, well, I've got to move that. I've got to think about it. I've got to make effort to move it. When I see my couples, it's a boulder, and they can't move it on their own. They cannot shift that boulder. It's blocking their path. They can't see around it. It's become the one thing in their world that they're up against. So, you know, the thing about couples, when they come in to see me, they're in all those different stages. And so when they're at the boulder, it's the harder relationship to shift. And but the ones that come in with a pebble, you know, a few tweaks to their life, and they're really thinking differently about each other. What's the time for her? What's the time right now? 3:50, okay, and I've got... Okay, all right. So I love this picture. My daughter gave me this, and I thought it was so beautiful. And we were just in the Aquarium of the Pacific in Long Beach, and they were swimming around holding hands. And I thought, oh, my gosh, that is, I could have taken my own picture. It was so beautiful. So they're lifelong partners, and if they don't hold on to each other at night, they might drift apart. And I think that's so appropriate. You know, our couples need to, after they finish their prayer, after they say they give thanks for just being, you know, they can hold hands and stay together. I mean, it's so important to think about the little things that are so important to their relationship. Yes, we can be therapists. Yes, we can use, you know, all the learning that we have, all the therapeutic interventions. But, you know, prayer and love and care and holding hands and laughter and humor, those are huge. You know, I had a Roman Catholic priest who was one of my dearest closest friends. And we were talking one day, and he said the greatest therapy in life is laughter, the greatest therapy. It's beyond any therapeutic intervention. It's definitely a wonderful gift. And he was an amazing man, and that was true. I really feel that when my couples laugh, that work has gone up, you know, so many notches. And my last slide is Romans, and we know that all things work together for good to them that God, that love God, to them who are the called according to his purpose. I feel I've been called. I really do. I believe that the Lord and you as care workers, I mean, I think when we truly believe in our Father, then he tells us where we're going to go and what we're going to do. And I believe, for me, I am here to save couples from divorce. The sense of joy I get, the sense of gratitude to our Lord when a couple leaves me and really have reunited and divorce is then not an option. So anyway, so that's my presentation. Is that the last one? Yeah. Thank you. So I'll take questions if anyone has any questions.
What role do faith and prayer have in your counseling and in the client population that you deal with?
So I work at LAC, which is in Los Angeles, Los Angeles Christian Health Center. And so we are a Christian clinic. So most of the couples I see there are faith-based couples. And because we are a Christian clinic, I'm allowed to be me. I can be as faithful as I wish. I can open in prayer with them, and I can close in prayer, and we can talk about acceptance through accepting each other and that role that our Lord wants them to play. So in private practice, again, I'm a Christian therapist. So if you come to see me, then faith is part of who I am. I'm in private practice as well as at Los Angeles Health Center. So in both my practices, acceptance is such a huge part of being in grace. I think that if we believe in our faith, then accepting is a huge part of that. And so in IBCT, it isn't based as a Christian founder therapist. He is actually a therapist. He's a clinical psychologist. However, because IBCT is so based in accepting and tolerating, that it sort of leads itself to what we believe as Christians. Any more questions? Oh, come on. I can't believe there's not one more question. Make one up.
Do you have any advice for someone that works in primary care to do this in a faster way?
Yeah. So I think that it's very... how many sessions do they get in primary care?
Well, they can come back and see one of our psychologists whenever they see. I'm a nurse practitioner, so I don't get the opportunity to do therapy necessarily, mm-hmm. but I do see couples that are clearly not getting along in my exam room. And so is there any aspect of this that we could utilize, or does it have to be like the structured
I do. I believe even not in the therapeutic room it comes up. I mean, I'll be waiting in the supermarket, and I'll help somebody, or I'll be on a bus and be sitting next to someone, or on an aircraft, like I was coming here and did therapy all the way. So it's really when people have differences, you know, they might say, "Oh, my husband," blah. You know, it's really curious to say, you know, what is it about him that is so different? What are your differences? Have you ever thought about your differences? Maybe you both think about. I actually did it in the bar last night downstairs when I was getting something to eat. And that was somebody here in one of the other conferences. Their wives, they don't agree on money, which is a really big one. And so it was like they look at money differently. So to look at it that you see things differently rather than your adversaries, that would be a wonderful way to say is, you know, you must, you know, and you could say, you know, it must have, you're married, you're together. What is it that are the differences that are between you that could maybe just be differences and not a divide? Because you could even give an example like, well, I have two children, one likes salty food and one likes sweet food. You know, so sometimes when I say, what am I going to cook? It's a nightmare because they both want something different. It's like, oh my gosh, I have to find a happy medium here. So those are nice examples too. Like, you know, we're made differently. When we marry someone, we didn't come from the same mold. So of course we're going to be different. So that's a very nice way to, you know, to share with people in as a nurse, you could actually have that nice dialogue with them about differences.
I was wondering, when you're talking about accepting and tolerance, how you counsel couples where, say, one is a believer who, you know, follows Christ, but the other has either drifted or just completely is intolerant of that, and how you counsel that believer to stay encouraged to be in the marriage, accept their partner, but not exactly, you know,
that's a really
abandon
good one.
Their faith.
Because I think the differences there are is that at that moment you have someone who believes and someone who maybe is questioning their belief, because maybe they were both believers. Were you saying they were both believers in the beginning, or they went into a marriage without being? Okay. So that the differences would be that they're at different places right now in who they are. That doesn't mean one's right or one's wrong or one's bad or one's good. That at that moment one has that acceptance that the other person is trying to find where they are. That doesn't mean that they are the judging of the other person. So when we think about what are the differences in those two people, one is still within the faith and one doesn't know. So you would be able to accept the fact that even though my partner is not where I am, those are our differences right now, that we are different in that way. That doesn't make, am I gonna echo? Oh, getting to the place where they have to be wrong. Do you see? It's not about right and wrong, it's about differences. So if you, I'm trying to think how that person would explain it to, or feel about it themselves. They cannot change their partner. You cannot bring him back, because he has to come back on his own. But for you to be able to live with him and love him for who he is, then you have to understand that at that moment there are differences. Those differences may not always exist on that one thing, but at this moment it does. But it's not about that person not caring. It's about that person at that time in their life having a difference about what they believe. So does that help? Did that make sense?
I have a question about the inappropriate couples, right? Understand that there's certain disorder, you would like to see them have it treated first. But if it's personality disorder or some kind of, you know, something that you see that is a rule out for use of IBCT, would you just say, well, you know, there's no way, there's nothing I can recommend you, or how do you deal with those couple?
So I would say that, and it isn't from a standpoint of saying I won't see you, it's from a standpoint that it doesn't work in that way. You know, if you're a couples therapist and you're only an IBC therapist, then it would be disingenuous to think that you're going to create that acceptance through tolerance with certain pathology, because for sure, for absolute sure, and I have them in my, I see individuals who have borderline and bipolar. I have them as individual therapists, as clients. And even in that, on a one-on-one with a therapist client, it's very difficult to keep them out of victimization. So imagine in the room, they're going to feel very victimized. And if that's the case, how are you going to process getting to that place of accepting the other person and having empathy for that other person? Because it's very difficult when you have certain disorders to be able to step out of that disorder. Otherwise, you would not really have that disorder. Some of them are very, very difficult disorders. And I believe that depending on how severe the disorder is, I had one couple where she had borderline traits, but she wasn't full-blown borderline. And it was very, very hard work. I mean, very, 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 very hard. I mean, to not have her escalate to feeling like she was all bad was very difficult. And they ended up getting divorced. But, you know, we did try for many, many sessions to do that kind of work, but it is difficult. I think couples therapy is difficult for those pathologies, I think. Maybe one DBT, if there is a DBT therapist, would be really good for that, for those disorders. Even CBT, I bet, would be more appropriate, because it's behavioral. It's not that that acceptance change, it's more behavioral. Is it 5 o'clock?
It's 4 o'clock.
Is it? Okay, we have till 5. Okay. Wow. I timed myself, and I must have gone really fast. So, anyway. So, are there any more questions?
What about traumatic brain injury or something where the thought process is not quite what it is, but they still have a commitment?
I think they would maybe go slower, you know, to sort of give that person more of a chance to be present in that that change. I think it's important to not rule out seeing a couple. And because Andrew Christensen is working for the VA, and so he's going to be dealing with a lot of military members that are suffering with different, and he is training VA clinicians right now to use IBCT in the military with vets. So I think that would be a great, you know, one to discuss with him and see where that's going.
Hi. Do you deal with couples that one of the partner has Asperger's spectrum disorder? I'm just asking because my son, he's very young, but he's going to get older. Hopefully he'll get married. So I wonder if you've dealt with any couples that one of the partner has that? Or?
No, but that again would be where, because it's so black and white for all, you know, in autism, it's very, that emotional stay that they experience is difficult to, but I do believe that that would say nobody with autism would ever have, you know, marry, which we know is not true. It would be maybe, again, it would be the pace of maybe, explaining more that sort of understanding of the other person in a different way, a much clearer way. Because I have a private practice, so I see couples and individuals, and I do see children with autism. And there is a difference on, you know, on being able to help them come to the same place, even in individual therapy. So I think that would be more integrated into the couple. Because the person married to that person already knows. So there would be that most probably a more understanding place for that couple.
Is this kind of therapy pretty common? Like, would most therapists be familiar with this and able to use it?
I think that it's been around, I think, since 1996, isn't it? Yeah. And it is growing. It is growing. There have been so many of the couples therapies that were established. You know, CBT was very, very much established. And EFT, emotionally focused therapy, became established before IBCT. But I think you're going to see a much greater use of IBCT going forward, definitely. I know less therapists who do IBCT than I know that do other kinds of therapy. So I think, I think Andrew's a very humble man, and I don't think that he really, I don't think IBCT is out there enough for people to be able to embrace it and learn it. So any more questions? No? Well, I think that's it. I'll end my presentation and just say thank you all for coming. I really appreciate it, and I've really enjoyed it. Thank you.